Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Left to Be Talked. Today is Monday, September 26th, and this episode is brought to you by my fantastic motorcycle sponsor, El Cajon Harley. That's right. I tell it to you every week. Fantastic sponsor, my exclusive motorcycle sponsor, the only motorcycle sponsor right here. You want to get a motorcycle, a Harley Davidson, hit up El Cajon Harley. These guys are rocking, man. Sponsoring Let There Be Talk. How fucking cool is that? Let's give them a little love back. Purchase maybe some shirts, helmets, a motorcycle, some gloves, whatever you fucking need. Tires, brakes. Hit up El Cajon Harley. Southern California super Harley dealer. I love these guys. My boy Greg is a comedy fan and also a biker and a rocker. He and I go see concerts. And we're going to go see Temple of the Dog, so I can't fucking wait for that. El Cajon Harley. And also, they will not be beat on their tire specials. They've got all kinds of amazing deals going on right now. Hit them up. They got some great 2016 Harley deals going. Excellent financing available. They got a ton of used bikes. Excellent service department. Go down there, maybe customize your bike. Maybe you got a bike you're a little bored with. Maybe you got a great old bike. And it just needs some fucking new shit to make it cool. Get some handlebars, some, a new seat, whatever you need. Jazz up your old bike or trade it in. Jazz up your old bike. Sound like an old guy. Hey, jazz up your old bike, Big Daddy. Way far out. Super cool way to go. These cats are wild. You ever watch that, the wild one? They just talk so crazy. Whoa, far out Scooby snacks, man. Anyway, El Cajon Harley, I love these guys, and they are my sponsor. Yes, my exclusive motorcycle sponsor. Podcast is late. Sorry. I just got in from a 5-day shark trip. I'm not going to really talk about it right now because I'm doing a whole episode on it. I'll just tell you that it was one of the most epic trips of my life. I've done a lot of things. I've dove with the great white sharks before, but nothing was like this week. It was a fucking concert of great whites, man. I mean, a fucking concert. It was just lines and lines of great white sharks. It was insane. I couldn't believe it. It was funny because we were talking to the guys that took us out on the boat, and they're like, oh man, you guys had the best trip we've ever seen since 2000. And they said the people that went last week only saw two sharks because a hurricane was coming in, and when the water gets too warm, the great whites boogie out of there. Two sharks. It's still cool. If you've never seen one great white in your life in a cage, two sharks is pretty fucking cool. But two sharks would be a disappointment to those people if they're looking at the Instagram and stuff right now and seeing the flurry of fucking sharks. At one point, there were seven sharks around the cage. I got a little freaked out because I couldn't keep track. I was like, fuck, there's one behind my head. Oh shit, there's two in front of me. There's one below us. There's one on the side. Check out my Instagram. I've been putting up some photos. I met some great new friends on the trip. And of course, my boy Dean Carr and I went out there and rocked it. And I'll drop a full episode with Dean Carr and a few other guests coming up here next week, next Monday, I believe, all about the shark trip. I did a podcast live out at the Guadalupe Islands. Pretty fucking insane. Anyway, I'll get into that later. Speaking of insane, today my guest, Any of my close friends know, all my life, of course, I love metal. I love rock. I love all kinds of music. And I always tell people, you know, don't just love one style, you know. Dig into music, man. If you really love music, music will fucking move you and take you through different things in your life. And as corny as that sounds, it does, man. You got different moods. You can't just throw Slayer on every day or you're going to fucking end up exploding in some fucking road rage or something. I bet if they did a study, like, what did you do right before you fucking had full-blown road rage? They're like, 2 months of speed metal. You gotta branch out, man. If you're a true music lover, you gotta see the beauty in all of it, man. And growing up young, I loved R&B and I loved soul. And I could have easily had a R&B soul band. I got close a couple times with some guys, and I know how much I love it. And any of my friends will tell you, I'll go fucking Earth, Wind, and Fire as much as I'll go Metallica. And right now, I've been talking about this band for about 2 years, and I don't think it's really sticking in people's minds. I pounded Rival Sons nonstop, but I also at the same time was shouting out St. Paul and the Broken Bones. You'll hear the story here. I was turned on to the band a couple years ago by somebody. Went and saw them live, and it was one of the fucking most spectacular performances by a lead singer I'd seen in 20 years, easily. Easily. And I've seen thousands of shows, man. That's not an exaggeration. I've seen thousands of shows. To have a guy knock me out, you know, a couple thousand shows in is quite amazing. This man right here, Paul Janeway, is his name. He's the lead singer of St. Paul and the Broken Bones. He's got God's gift on his vocal cords. The guy can sing. The band can fucking play the shit out of R&B. If you like, did you ever see that movie, The Commitments? If you haven't seen the movie, The Commitments, do yourself a favor before you do anything. Buy St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Half the City, and Sea of Noise, their new record, Sea of Noise, and then watch The Commitments. And you'll understand what I'm talking about. And also, of course, early James Brown. I like 70s James Brown, around 68 to 72. I love when James Brown really becomes, you know, he's got Bootsy Collins in the band. He's got Bootsy's brother on guitar. That era of James Brown, I went crazy for. And then later on, of course, I went crazy for all the 70s R&B. I've talked about it many times, and even up to Lenny Kravitz, Mama Said, really got me into, and Mother Love Bone, you know, even some of the Chris Cornell vocals have some serious soul in them. I love soul rock, I always have, and it fucking blows my mind when I can see somebody do it full-blown legit, and not only see a band do it, but see people in the audience. And that's what I saw last week. It was Tuesday that Paul did the podcast. And then I went to go see him again at the Wiltern. And I was a little leery to see him because when somebody blows my mind so hard, the first time, a couple years ago at the El Rey, I'm like, I don't, you know, fuck, I don't really, I got this weird thing going, man, lately where it's like, try to see a band once and then love it and move on, because after that it never seems to, it's great, but it's like it doesn't, you know, the first time you see a band, man, it's just so fucking electric. I can tell you right now, the first time I saw Def Leppard on the High and Dry tour, you know, Van Halen, you know, Judas Priest, all these bands. Of course, I saw these bands over and over, because back then, each year, they were getting better and better. A lot of times now, bands come through, a lot of people shout out, you got to go see such and such. And I'm like, well, I saw them 10 years ago when they were absolutely fucking hungry and dangerous and not out for the third house money. There's very few acts that still go for it. Springsteen being one of them. The guy is fucking superhuman. 4 hour shows. The guy could do an hour and a half and just fucking walk. Which, by the way, get Bruce's book, Born to Run. It just came out today. Get that fucking book, even if you're not a Bruce fan. Get it and read it and find out what that guy's about, man. That guy is a true American legend. But let me get back to Paul. So I go to the wheel turn. They put me on the list. Very kind. Thank you, guys. I go solo in between shows. I had an 8 o'clock show at the store. I had a 8 o'clock show at the West Side Comedy Theater. Then I bolted to the wheel turn. I made it 4 minutes before they go on. I got this weird fucking thing I've never really told people, but I refuse to go to a concert if I don't see the first song. I can't stand it. I need to see the band walk on. I need to feel the electricity of the lights going down, the audience going crazy. I want to see this band play the first song and see how they start up the fucking machine. There's nothing better to me than the first song of every fucking concert. And so I make it. Thank God. I was flying on my bike. Like, I got to get there. They went on about 4 minutes late, which was great. I ran in, got myself planted behind the soundboard. They walked on. And I'll tell you what, LA is really known for subdued crowds, which is all right. I get it. People are like, I don't like playing LA. They think they're so cool. Yeah, they probably, you know, but they are cool. Most of them are in the business. Most of them work in the biz. Most of them are in bands and TV or whatever, man. It takes a lot to fucking electrify people in this town. I get it. You see a lot of stuff. You see a lot of movies. You hear a lot of records. You see a lot of concerts. But when this band walked on, I tell you what, man, I've been going to the wheel turn for years. The fucking volume of the crowd was insane. They were going crazy on every move this band was doing. And I gotta tell you, man, the record just came out. I've listened to it probably 100 times, no exaggeration. I was rocking it on my shark trip. It is the ultimate makeout record. Everybody needs a makeout record. This is it. See a Noise. It's a makeout record. And Paul, I love you, man. I can't tell you enough. I can't thank you enough for doing the show. I know you're fucking busy. And it was an epic guest. To talk music with you, my man, was fucking just electric. I felt like we were playing mean Olympic ping pong. Just bam, 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 bam. Anyway, people, get this record. See a Noise. And get their first record, Half the City. Talk about some incredible, incredible music. And then tell everybody about it. Spread the word. Before I get to the episode, let me just give you a couple quick things. One thing, don't forget, Earthquaker Devices. If you play guitar, bass, or anything, any kind of instruments, get yourself a stomp box. You got to get a stomp box, earthquakerdevices.com. Visit them on Instagram. They got a fantastic Instagram and a killer Twitter. And also, they're making amps now, which is pretty fucking cool. And I love them. They've been a sponsor of this podcast since the podcast fucking started almost, man. Well, not really, but I mean, you know, like a couple years. Going on 3 years, I believe. A sponsor of this podcast. How cool is that? Get yourself a stomp box. Hit them up online and say, I sent you. And, you know, and also they got cool shirts. Earthquaker Devices, every band I've seen lately, I go see all kinds of bands. They're all using these guys' shit. And you know, rock gods can use anything. So, you know, that tells me one thing about the equipment. They like it, but most of all, it's bulletproof. Because if you're bringing this shit on tour, you know, it's got to work. You can't be having any stomp box failure. Nothing worse than a guy goes to hit a lead, hits the pedal, and it's just fucking nothing. That's just like a coke dick. That's like having coke dick. You're ready to get some and just limp coke dick. Don't have coke dick. Get an earthquaker device. Come on. All right. I'm headed to Edmonton Wednesday. I'll be at the Comic Strip, Edmonton, Canada, 28, 29, 30, 1, 2. Come see me, Edmonton. Come on, prove it, Canada. Canada loves podcasts. I see the numbers. You guys love it up there. Also, I'll be hosting the two Cat House Nights in L.A. October 5th and 6th with Ricky Rackman. Then this just in, I've got all the New York dates in, so I'll be at the Stand every night, October 12th through the 18th, and also Gotham on October 18th. I'll be at the Stand every night, New York, October 12th through the 18th. Sorry, that's kind of confusing, but I'm New York. I'm coming out for almost 2 weeks. Then let's see here. Fresno, see you on October 21st, Frank's Place. Sacramento, just in. Going to be doing the Punchline November 10th, 11th, and 12th. And San Francisco, I'm coming home December 15th, 16th, and 17th. I love all you guys. Please leave a review. I'm trying to get to 1,000 reviews. It's my goal by the end of the year. And also, subscribe to the podcast. I love you guys. Keep the candles lit. Here he is, Paul Janeway, St. Paul and the Broken Bones. Candles lit. Hey, what's happening? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. I got a fantastic guest today. Introduce yourself, man.
I am Paul from the band St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
You don't got a last name?
Oh, yeah, I do. Paul Janeway from St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
So fucking great to have you, man. It's funny. First of all, I love your band.
Oh, good.
I love your band. I love you. And I've seen probably over a couple thousand concerts in my life, and I really remember specifically, you know, I'm a huge R&B guy, and I saw Terrence Trent D'Arby on the big record, the first one.
Yeah.
Then I also saw him on the Vibrator record. Now, the Vibrator record, not very many people know that record, and I saw him at the Fillmore, and there's probably only, this is long after his fame, couple hundred people, and it was hands down the best front man I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And I seen Prince, and I think Prince is on the top.
Absolutely.
Seen Prince many times. But this was something I still cannot believe, and the reason I bring that up was a couple years ago, I get turned on to your record. People know I love R&B. Like, I love Otis, I love early stuff, you know, also the 70s stuff, Curtis Mayfield,
oh, yeah.
A god to me,
yeah.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. My point is, I get your record, I go see you at the El Rey, and it was one of the best shows I'd ever seen.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. And it was probably like, you're like, we sucked that night. You know, every time I tell somebody that, go, we were horrible that night, I'm like, just go with it, man.
Yeah.
But you are exactly what I played music for years, 25 years, and you're exactly the flavor that I also love. Because I always had a dream of having an R&B band, but it was hard to find that kind of players, and it takes a serious, serious long commitment and journey.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And also for people to get that style. You know, like, I don't know if it was easier for you to find that kind of, those players and stuff and understand the dynamics and that kind of thing. And really, like, what got me going back on it was Curtis Mayfield, that box set came out. And also Lenny Kravitz's Mama Said record. He had a lot of falsetto, you know, so many tears, you check that thing, you know.
Yeah.
And he covered Billy Jack. There was an era of that, and then Terrence and Prince and all that I just go crazy.
Right.
You know, how does it happen for you?
I mean,
of course, church.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the church thing, of course. I grew up around that. I mean, for me, it was just one of those things that I always wanted to do that. That was my natural fit, always.
Right.
But it was also one of those things. I'm not an incredibly social person, so I didn't know a lot of people.
Right.
And
you're like a nerd?
I'm I mean, I think the whole band, we're just a bunch of nerds that really love music and especially R&B and old soul, and we grew up on it. You know, I mean, you know, half the guys are from the Muscle Shoals area. We had the Swampers and all that great stuff. And then, you know, me and Jesse became really good friends. He's a bass player, and we just love music. But it was always something I wanted to do. And he knew everybody. He knew all the players. He knew he knew what he wanted to do. And I said, the only thing, my only requirement is that I want to be in a band with horns.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what happened. We just kind
immediately said, I don't want to make any money.
Yeah.
Let's get about nine dudes in this band and split a quarter.
Damn right. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what we did, and it was it was crazy, cuz you know, when people you play clubs and they ain't seen no damn you know, eight-piece band get up there and do that, and they're like I don't know where to put y'all. So there'd be times I'd be on top of bars.
Yeah.
And you just had to learn it. And so that was fun. It's a good time. And but yeah, no money for sure.
No, and I've never played music or did comedy for money ever. To me, to find the right guys like you have would give me such a fucking a wealth in happiness that I wouldn't give a fuck about money. But you need every guy on the same page. Like, well, we're going to play this style of music. Right. We're probably 99.9, going to make zero money. But you know what? When we go out, we're going to show people stuff that they aren't going to see probably ever. You know, in this world of, you know, pre-recorded and taped and one guy. You know, in the world, R&B in the world to people is just hip-hop, which is ridiculous
to
me.
It is.
Because to me, growing up, it was Earth, Wind & Fire. It was Lakeside. It was Curtis Mayfield. It was Otis Redding. It was, you know, all this stuff in the 70s. James Brown. I went through a James Brown phase about 2 years. Whew, I couldn't.
As we all do.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I remember getting that Live, Love, Live or whatever, Paris.
I
was like, listen to this band. It was my dream, you know?
The JBs, man. That's that. I mean, I think, you know, people talk about greatest American bands, and you know, you got the JBs, you got Booker T and the MGs.
Unbelievable.
You know, you got the Swampers. Like, the Meters, that's who I think of.
Funky
I don't
Meters.
Think, yeah, I don't think anybody else but them.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I saw Neil Young did a tour with Booker T and the MGs as his backup band.
Really?
You can. I got it on bootleg. I saw it at the Shoreline. I think you can YouTube it. It made Southern Man and all his great songs so different and cool. You're like, listen to this, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's cool.
It really is cool. Now, well, how old are you?
I'm 33. I just turned 33, I guess, a couple days ago.
Oh, happy birthday,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And before, because I watched an interview with you and you guys said, well, fuck it. We're over. Let's just make the last kind of demo and go to college, and this will just be fun for us.
Right.
Whatever. Before you make this demo, which I assume are songs on the first record, were you playing any other styles growing up? Did you ever try to play rock music? Like, hey, let's be like a grunge band, or hey, were you ever into Oasis? Whatever, you know what I mean? Because I try to picture you like, I can't picture you ever being up there like being like the Strokes or something.
No, I'm not cool enough, I don't think. I think for me, I this was the second band I'd ever been in. I mean, growing, obviously singing in church and shit like that. Like, I did that a lot. And then the first band I was ever in with was actually how I met Jesse, who's the bass player.
Right.
And I was just happy to be in a band. And I didn't, you know, it's weird. I know people find this weird, but I didn't grow up listening to Led Zeppelin or any The Who or anything. I didn't know much about it.
Why is that? Was it a church family, strict?
Yeah,
it was
strict. And then eventually it was just kind of like you hadn't listened to it. But then, you know, I hit about 18, 19, it was just the door flung open.
Yeah.
And I was just devouring everything. And I haven't really stopped since because I still feel like I'm playing catch up, you know?
Yeah. Because you're in the South, which is huge classic rock world,
Right.
Were you not listening to the radio? Was it a rule at the house?
Yeah, just not listening to the radio, not hearing. And to be fair, it wasn't like I was uber rebellious or anything like that. I hated school, but that was about it for me.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I did what I was told. Church doors are open. I was in there. And
your family, are they part of the church? Are they like?
Yeah, they were. They were at the time. I mean, as anything else, you know, you get older, you grow, and you get a little more life experience. And,
yeah.
And that shit kind of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say fades away. It just, your mind opens up a little bit more.
It's funny you say that, because I was just in North Carolina all week doing shows. It was the first time doing shows in the Bible Belt. And I say that. I think that kids have the internet now, and they're going to make their own decisions and everything. But it didn't seem like that to me at all. It just seemed like it's our way, and whatever you say is wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really interesting in the world of choose for yourself.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to grow up. You would think, oh, we have all this exposure now, and it's like, well, that's not... To me, it's one of those things, just it's family and your surroundings still are very important. I mean, what's the old saying, like, you marry the girl that's you know, within a 10-mile radius of you.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. I mean, in that way, that's how it works. And I think for me, it was a situation where you just kind of fall out of love with that, because I would probably consider myself a fairly liberal guy.
Yeah. It's funny, because when I look at you, I think you're already married.
Right.
And you grew up in the church world, and I look
and
at
I
you.
And I don't drink. I've never had an ounce of alcohol either. So I'm a weird, that's why I'm a weird guy.
Yeah, you're not really, though, because I know a lot of guys that don't drink and you can keep it together, you know. But I get it, you know, you didn't rebel. Like junior high, you didn't sneak off and smoke weed or anything?
No, nothing. I was in the church.
In church?
I was the janitor at the church. I was preaching at the church.
Wow.
It's a bizarre thing for me, because I never thought that would, I mean, I just thought that's how it was.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember I had cousins who, you know, that it was like, they did that. They'd go, you know, sneak off, smoke some weed, and go in the woods in the tent and get, you know, get messed up. And like, I was like, oh, that's not me. I want to be a preacher. I want to do this. This is what I have. This is the life.
Wow. And you're like the Sam Kinison of rock.
I guess so, in a way. I mean, it's so bizarre.
And you were really into that, because I look at that also as performing.
Absolutely.
Some of the biggest evangelists, I think what they have going for them, and even if you look back at some of the crazy ones like Jim Jones and that Guyana thing and everything, is they really can pick up on how to guide people through their performance.
Absolutely.
And when I watched you perform, I was electrified. And I see a lot of frontmen, and I consider myself an okay frontman.
You do stand up, so that's the ultimate.
It really is.
That's the scariest thing out there. I mean, because for me, I can hide behind the band if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
You ain't got shit to hide behind. You just got to, and then you get all the glory. There's things, you know, it's a balance. But that's, I mean, church is where you learn that. You learn to read an audience.
And be big and small.
Exactly.
Dynamics is church to me. It's like, can I hear you out there? And then you bring it all the way down, like, he comes into your land. You know what I mean? And you're just like, yeah, I mean, I can hear you, man.
Mountaintops and valleys low. I mean, that's what you do. That's how we set the set list up.
Wow.
To take them up and down.
Yeah.
Because you're going on, you want people at the same show to be able to cry and to be able to laugh. And that's what you want.
You want that.
And that's the whole point. And it's all about creating that moment. And that, I mean, for anything, for any performance, it's about that connection with an audience that you go, wow, this is it. This is, if I could bottle this up, I'd never leave my house.
Yep.
But I can't. And that's the whole point for us. Any show we ever play is that right there, is to bottle that up, to create that moment where it is almost like you talk about Prince or seeing somebody live.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's about that kind of, you almost like, was that a religious moment I just had?
It's true.
And it's it doesn't happen every show.
No. That's funny you say that, because I was just telling a friend of mine, he said, you know, like, hey, you know, you played a lot of music. What was your best gig as music? You know, because I tour with a lot of people and I play, you know, thousands of gigs.
Right.
And I said, you know what's funny is, like, out of the couple thousand gigs I played music, I probably had 5 out-of-body experiences where it's so magic that you can't even fucking believe. You step off stage, you're like, are we done? You can't even believe
it.
And with comedy, I've done over 3,000 shows now. I know, in 7 years compared to 25 years. I've had hundreds of those gigs.
Yeah.
Out of body. So to me, like you said, it doesn't happen every show. I feel that's because you have so many pieces that have to all be in place. The horn guy's got to be happening. The drummer is gonna, the bass player. No one ever goes out of tune. The sound system's perfect. The venue's perfect. The light, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many things that involve. But with comedy, it's me, the mic, and the crowd. So there's so much like possibility of next level magic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that tingly feeling from your head to your toes, and when you can see it in everybody's eyes, you know, in the band and in the audience, and you're just like, this is a moment. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to, you know, I've had it happen with, you know, 20 people in the audience, and I've had it happen, you know, with 2,000, and I think that's the thing, man. It's just, that's what it's about. I mean, I don't know, but that's why I perform. I mean, that is to get that. I love doing it and to get that moment.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if there's 20, as cliche as that
is. It is. It is.
You know, it matters for the tour bus gas money.
Exactly.
But other than that, man, like, I never shortchange a small crowd. Like, I don't go, this is 20. Let's just do 10 songs and get out of here. I give it to them because those 20 are going to leave and go, man, we saw the greatest show. And next time you come through, word of mouth, grassroots, old school.
Yeah, that's our approach, though. That's how we approach. We're very old school in the way we approach things. It's like, if there's 20 people there, give them the damn show of their life.
Yeah.
Make them never forget it. And that's the goal every time.
Now, I've got to give hats off. I don't know who your record company is. Who is it?
Right now it's Songs. Songs or Records. Sorry. Records is the name of the That is actually the name of the company.
Well, who signed you for the first record?
Single Lock in Muscle Shoals. They're actually good friends of ours. They got us for the first record.
Because that is to sign a band like you guys, you immediately have to think there's no money going to be here. We're not going to get any radio play. Kids aren't going to like it.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be an easy cash in. And what I saw from that was, I don't know how I found out. I think it was a YouTube video. Those ones where you guys were in the warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I remember specifically the tune. I clicked on it. It was Broken Bones and Pocket Change.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is, to me, one of the best songs I've heard in 20 years.
Oh, thank you.
For me, that is like, it has everything you want in a song. It's got great lyrics. It has a full drama theme.
Yeah, yeah.
It fucking comes on like Try a Little Tenderness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it grabs me right away. I go, I'm fucking in.
Yeah.
And then I start watching all these videos. What I'm trying to say is whoever was pumping you, there was a shitload of pro shot stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, early on. Well, I mean, I think the thing was is that I think we all knew, all right, The record's the record, and you know, at the time we made that record, we were only a band for
6 months.
Yeah, four or five months.
How long did it take to track the record? 2 days.
It took we took basically it was the best. We basically judged it by my vocal take.
Really?
So we took it the best of the three vocal takes. The best. We'd play it three times. We didn't have time.
Yeah.
Didn't have money. Didn't have time.
So 24 track or digital? What was it?
No, it was the 20. We did it on analog. We did it on tape.
Yeah.
So
where
we
at?
Up in Muscle Shoals or Sheffield, Alabama, called a place called Nut House, and then we mixed it at Fame.
Right.
Which is the famous studio there.
Wow. So you go in, you guys set up, and you just track it in a weekend?
That's basically how it
Get
went.
The fuck out.
Yeah, that's how we did it.
We were
like, well, that's how they did it. So
yeah.
Let's see if we can do it. Because we were like, that's a band to me is not worth their salt if they can't go in there and do something respectable like that. Which, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bands that don't play shit live anymore.
99%, dude. I mean, come on. I'm not here to shit on the business.
No.
But I said this many times. People, and I love Adele. I don't like her new record. I think it was that record is no good.
Yeah.
And people are just going to love it. And I love her, so I'm not shitting on her.
Yeah,
she's
talented for sure.
I think the Chasing Pavements record and the next record are masterpieces. But what I'm trying to get to is people were like, can you hear her sing? Can you fucking imagine this? And I go, you know what? That's how everyone used to be.
Right.
And it's so bad now that when someone has talent, you're like, holy shit, look at this. I always feel that the record company people are like, don't push this. They're going to want more talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're going to want more of this, and we're going to be fucked, man. Yeah. We just want to get this garbage out there and then get on to the next garbage.
Well,
and I feel the same way with you guys.
Yeah.
When people say, man, can you believe how he sings? I go, yeah, I can believe it. Mm-hmm. Because why don't you go back and listen to where he's getting this from?
Absolutely.
He took the fucking right steps. He wasn't listening to fucking, you know, hip-hop or samples or right. lip-syncing.
Right.
He was listening to live vocals.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, to me, is, we do feel, it's kind of a lost art in
yeah.
a lot of ways. And there are, the good thing is there are people, I think personally, there are people, there is an audience for it. I think there are people that are really like, you know what? Kind of tired of the same old shit and the same old, like, all right. You know, they have it down, and this is no joke, they have it down to an algorithm.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, for real, like, that, it's a mathematical process.
Absolutely.
For pop music. And you're like, you got to be kidding me.
It's gross.
Then that's gross. To me, that's like, I if you know, it's like, I think we're going to look at like the auto-tune vocoder period the same way as that maybe we look at like hair metal or certain things because it doesn't age well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there was a time where I just felt they had a warehouse out in Burbank where they just had hip-hop props. Some cars with rims and chains and naked women and bottles to pop that were like, you know, like Dom Perignon. And I thought, to me, it just seemed like next guy, and the guy come in, they throw the shit on him. It's like, boom, 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 boom. He's like, yeah, got the rims, motherfucker, come on. You know what I mean? And then the next guy, different hat, tilted to the side, outfit, different car, but rims, spinners. We got the spinners now, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just the same videos over and over. And I love some hip hop.
Yeah,
you know?
Me too.
Yeah, but...
But it's the same thing. Like that's the same thing. Like even in that realm, everywhere, there's this manufactured bullshit that you just kind of like. You're like, man, and you would like to think, oh well, that doesn't have any lasting value, but it does.
Oh God, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it bums you out a little bit, but you just, I mean, our whole thing is like we do what we do.
Yeah.
You don't like it, sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like a lot like with my comedy. It's like, you know, I'm not going to go do a cruise ship and just change. You know what I mean? Hey, you can come do this room, but you can't say this and that. I'm like, well, you got the wrong guy.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, just get another guy. There's a lot of those guys out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Get them.
You know? Yeah. Now, when you start, first, I didn't hear the answer to the question. Your first band, was it different sounding? Were you guys?
Yeah. I mean, it was still my voice, but they wanted to do... We did, like, Zeppelin covers.
Wow.
And stuff like that.
So, no shit?
No shit.
Well, give me some... give me, like, Been a Long Time. Or, no, give me, like, Dazed and Confused.
Oh, I can't... Man, I can't do it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Plant, man. That's.
I just imagine you're like, I've been dazed and confused.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I loved it. Well, Jesse told me, he said the reason that he did is he's never had a friend that could actually like do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know any Zeppelin.
Yeah,
it was so. And I know it's crazy, but I did. We would do that. I mean, we'd write a few of our own things. And it
just a cover band in the bar circuit.
It was. We did our own stuff. I mean, we wrote our own stuff. It was a little weird, kind of quirky, a little more rock. And it was really weird, and it wasn't really geared around my voice, but I was just happy to have friends and to be playing music.
Are your parents like, hey, that's the devil right there?
No, my parents have grown just like anybody else does. And I think I think at first, especially with this, they were kind of like, all right, you know, my dad works for a paving and construction company.
Oh yeah.
So the whole idea.
Blue collar guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, my mom, you know, works for, she's a nurse.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, there's a thing about putting your head down and grinding it out and working working for family and things
hell
like that.
Yeah, man.
So, which I apply to this.
Yeah.
You know, I apply, but it. I think when this first started, they were all kind of like. All right, when you go, summer vacation.
We
yeah, exactly. And then we still joke about it. Like, we'll see family and they'd be like, all right, well, When you going to get a real job?
How about you? This is the one that makes my skin crawl. It's Thanksgiving. You still doing that music thing, Paul? That music thing.
Yeah.
You still doing it? A guy just said that to me a couple days ago. He goes, this fucking guy makes my fucking skin. He's like a manager in the business, you know? And he said, still doing that comedy thing? I was like, yeah. Yeah, just like 3,000 people this week. You know, Carolina Theater. Just got off tour with Alice in Chains. Yeah. Still doing that comedy thing. Fucking guy, man.
There's only,
you know?
There's only one, I guess, job that I encountered that I want to be like, no, this is legit. Mm-hmm. And it's people that cut my hair at Sports Clips.
Oh.
Because they don't believe that, like, somebody comes in here at Sports Clips, to get their hair cut. and the woman's always like, oh, yeah, you do music. And you're like, well, what do you really do?
Yeah.
It's like, no, damn it. This is for real. Yeah. I tour the damn world doing this.
Yeah.
You know? And
People don't know. To them, it's Beyonce, Adele, the Rolling Stones, and Bruce. That's what's out there.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And you're like, no, I make this is what I do for a living.
Yeah.
And it's the one job that the only time I'm like, no, we've opened up for the Rolling Stones. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, unbelievable.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's so funny. That's the only time that I start trying to like puff my chest out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't care from there, but apparently it's the lady cutting my hair at the Sports Clips.
I worked for the Stones for 4 years. Traveled the world with them, 02 to 06.
Awesome.
Yeah. And one thing I worship about them is they have obviously really hip kids. Because I know that Jagger probably goes like, who should we get this year on tour, you know?
Yeah.
Because the years I was out, it was like the White Stripes, the Strokes, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Black Eyed Peas, Los Lonely Boys, whoever was kind of hip at the time, they would have do a few gigs.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way that you get to take a picture with the band, right? They're going to line up right here. The band's going to walk by. They're going to take a picture, and then they're going to get on stage.
Exactly.
I love that because people are like, you know, hey, were you back there just doing weed with fucking Keith and stuff? It's like, nah, man. It ain't like that. It's called a fucking business.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Well, that was when we did it, when we got to open up for them, we
Did you get to sing a song with Jagger?
I did not.
Damn it, because he had Joss Stone would come out.
Oh, I know. Well, we didn't know.
You would have smoked him.
Oh, I'd love
I love Jagger.
I know.
I love him. But he was probably like, don't bring that kid up here.
Yeah, no, it was really funny because we got to do two shows with him. And
where at?
We got to do Atlanta.
Oh yeah.
At the Georgia Tech football stadium.
Killer.
And then we did
Bulldog. Is that the Bulldogs?
That's the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, yeah. Yellow Jackets?
Yes, Yellow Jackets. Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, I know.
Who's
I know.
One Walter Payton played for? Or Herschel Walker?
Herschel Walker played for Georgia.
Georgia.
That's in Athens.
I got you.
Georgia. Anyway. And then we did a European tour and then came back and did Buffalo, New York at the Buffalo Bills Stadium.
Oh.
And it was funny because a woman comes in our dressing room and says, hey, is Paul here? I said, I'm Paul. And she said, come with me. And I'm about halfway down the elevator. I'm like, hey, what am I going to do? She's like, well, Keith and the guys want to hang out.
What?
Yeah. So I was like.
So you're going into the Rattlesnake Lounge?
I didn't even know.
Oh,
I didn't even know what to
yeah.
expect, you know, because you hear stories.
Yeah.
But my first thought wasn't like, holy shit, I'm about to go meet the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
My first thought was, if the band does not get to meet these guys, I will never this down.
You're so right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I've never
it's all down. About you now, like Prince on Purple Rain.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when the band's
exactly.
in there and they got the puppet. Ay, 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 ay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. So I said, hey, is the band going to get to meet them? She's like, oh, yeah. They just want to say hello. So I go down there and I hang out And it's just
they're playing snooker.
Yeah, snooker, and Keith's in there, and he spills a drink on my foot, and doesn't even acknowledge it.
Nope. He's like he did it on purpose just to see if it was a test.
Yeah, it probably was a test of some sort. But and I was, you know, I don't care. I'm like mm-hmm. I'm still kind of, you know, in shock at the moment.
Oh, you're framing them.
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
My wife made those shoes, and then Keith spilled wine on them in that frame.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was just a crazy experience, and got to hang out with Ronnie and Charlie, and then Mick came in there for a little bit.
Yeah,
it was an incredible day.
I mean, you remember the day you got the call to open for him? How did that happen?
This what is crazy is it is a weird circumstance, and how we played Coachella, which you know is a huge festival, and so apparently the AEG, the big old concert promoters, yep. you know, they're doing the Stones tour. And one of the guys, I guess one of the head guys there, one of the big wigs was there. And he, I think they were there to see somebody else.
Right. And not like they, Alabama Shakes or something?
Something, right. somebody else. And they and I think a young intern was like, hey, go check out this band. I think y'all might like it. And anyway, so I get off stage, and a guy goes, hey, I'm, you know, blah, 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 blah. He said, how would you like open up for Rolling Stones?
Wow. And he comes with the offer.
He said,
to your face.
I said, I laughed. You tell Keith and Mick. We'll go ahead and open up.
Out of Coachella in the desert.
Yeah.
Hey, you might want to get some water, dude.
Exactly.
It's hot out here.
I had no, you know, he had like a, you know, shorts and a button up or whatever. Yeah, and I was like, who the hell's this
one
guy?
Of those fucking dust masks.
Yeah.
On.
I was like, who the hell's this guy? So anyway, I get in the van, you know, that's when we started writing a new record.
Right.
And I get in the van and I tell the guys, I said, hey, y'all never believe this shit.
Yeah. But
this guy said, how would y'all feel about opening up Rolling Stones? And we all laughed.
Yeah.
We all laughed.
Yeah.
So
inside, do you think maybe it's true or who was the guy?
Yeah. Well, so no, when I Googled the guy.
Yeah.
I was like,
right.
This guy might not be full of shit.
Yeah.
And so
I
then
Googled
our,
the guy.
Yeah. And then they, then our manager, a couple weeks later, said she was over the moon, and it was. I mean, like I said, it's something I told the guys before we played the first show. I said this is written on bands' gravestones.
Yeah,
I mean, I look at the Meters bio, and one thing that's mentioned: opening up for the Rolling Stones.
Same with their Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it's just one of those weird things, and so.
Guns N' Roses, too.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I remember Axl said, we're going to open for the Stones. And they said, well, they're broke up because that was after Tattoo You. And she, that's never going to happen. He goes, oh, it's going to happen. And fucking, look at Steel Wheels or whatever tour.
Yeah.
89, boom, they're fucking opening for the Stones.
That's what I'm saying. It's one of those things that it's just, you can't, like, all the people that, you know, especially in our hometown, that were, you know how people get jealous.
Yeah.
And,
oh, God, yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, and so for us, it was like that you couldn't mess with that. That was like, you're done. That like it's like you did that. Like, and so it was really
cool. Serious. See you later.
Yeah,
we're fucking. You know, even if we didn't play again in this small town I live in, it'll always be I'm the only guy in this town that opened for the Stones.
It's not well.
Drinks on you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it was one of those things. You're just like, all right, nobody can take that away from you. And you have moments like that where you're like, nobody can take this away from you. And you've worked your ass off and it does. And it's all about, you know, people work their ass off and, you know, it's about luck, timing, and hard work, and that's the combination, and you just can't predict it.
It's hard work, is what it is.
Yeah,
and songwriting though, people don't understand. You got to have songs. I've seen a million people sing. You know, I think The Voice was a very, very bad thing for singers. The show The Voice.
Oh yeah,
because once Christina Aguilera is out, people think it's all about vocal acrobats.
Yeah.
Of like, yeah, which is zero soul. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Zero soul. And then people are dumb in a way where they're like, God, how great is she? And it's like, well, there's 90 of those at the audition that do the same thing.
Right.
And Christina Aguilera, I'm not taking anything away from her.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is everybody that wanted to be that after. And it just became acrobats and not soul and feeling and also phrasing and the way that your timing is and everything. It's so fucking hard to sing like that. People don't know to, you know, like, The Commitments to me, the movie.
Right.
When that guy comes on, I was like, could be the best singer I've seen, you know, in years.
Right.
And you, that's a lot of natural stuff. Do you remember the first time that you sang? How did you know that you had that? Were you just singing to like old Otis Redding records and stuff? Because the timing and everything, you know?
I never thought I was much of a singer, to be fair.
That's crazy.
I mean,
in the car, I used to sing, you know, and I started to get it, you know. I'd be like, urgent, emergency. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could do it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
I
could do this. If that fucking stereo was a little lower, I'd be like, urgent. I'd stop. You know what I mean? Remember the first time you hear your vocal solo it up?
Oh,
the
yeah.
The engineer's like, let's listen to that. That might be a little pitchy.
We
and
call,
he hits it,
we
and
call
like,
that, that's the humiliator.
Yeah, you're like, hey, man. Put the band back in
there.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. No, that's the humiliator button.
How does it happen? Is it in church?
I guess so. I never, actually, it was bizarre. I had a pastor at the time, and he was just really about humility and humbling, you know, and being humble. And I knew, I was like, man, I really love performing, and I really love singing. But I think his idea was, I think he was coming in from a good place, but was to keep me humble.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I never thought.
Was he saying you're not that good? Or
yeah,
is it,
yeah.
Oh,
I
wow.
mean, just kind of putting me, you know. And
he's like that guy, not my tempo.
Exactly. Oh, it's a great movie.
You know what's funny about that is I've worked with some producers, and they ride the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
And also in comedy, I had a comic I look up to. And I was doing really good the first couple of years. And then in the hall, he said, yeah, you that's some bullshit material up there, dude. Like, you're way funnier in the hallway. And that helped me, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
right.
I think maybe your pastor, you know, he's letting you know, yeah, you got some, but you're not like, you know, fucking Purple Rain.
Exactly. And I think you know, to be fair, I think that helps me now. Because I don't feel like, oh, I've arrived. I mean, obviously I'm making a living doing this, but there's still things I want to, I mean, I'm not worried about some modern singer. There's no modern singer that I look at and go, you know, and I'm a competitive guy.
I mean, I saw you say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a competitive human being. So.
You have to be also, I think in the arts in a little bit of way to I don't think competitive is the right word. I think it's drive.
Drive, yeah.
And the competition makes your drive.
Right.
And eventually you get somewhere and you go, oh, yeah, I'm cool with everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you need that drive to get you to write and work and perform.
Yeah, I think to me, but it's the Giants. It's the Marvin Gayes and the Otis Reddings. And those are the singers. Marvin Gaye said, any goal of any singer, and I think any goal of any performer is immortality.
Yeah.
And if you don't think that, then don't put your shit out there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not trying to be like, you know, whatever, but that we don't do the, there's a drive to for perfection and to be great.
Yeah.
And that's
James Brown, man.
Yeah.
My favorite clip is when he's busting the Bootsy Collins for $5, you know. it's like he's spinning around and he's like, Alola.
Yeah.
Alola. Alola. And then he goes, right here's where he's gonna find me. He's like, you know I gotcha. You know I gotcha.
Yeah.
Two times. And he goes, that means 10. He got me two times because he missed two different notes.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, you know, yeah. Was he a crazy perfectionist? Absolutely. And does his music sit around forever and stand the test of time? It's like that famous thing, when you die, like Jim Morrison said, will they make a movie about you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
When I played music, I always, always could hear the sounds in my head. I always wanted to be Lenny Kravitz kind of soul meets Mother Love Bone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I just loved guys, you know, Elton John, you know, songs, man, but also soul.
Yeah.
You know, even some of that Blind Melon,
you know,
Tones of Home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there was some soul going on around.
I think that's true. I mean, not to sound whatever, but you know, I actually, bizarrely, Elton John is a huge fan of ours.
Oh wow!
And so dude knows more soul than anyone I've ever met.
Well, he's a record guy.
If you
saw the Tower Records movie, he was there every Tuesday morning.
I mean, he is such a. It was insane.
Turning you on to shit you never heard of, right?
Yeah, I mean, just insane, and so. Yeah. He actually, one of the nicest things, he gave me a old 45 of this singer, and we had talked about, and
who was it?
It's I think his name. Golly, I can't remember his name. It was Darren. I can't remember the last name, but it was you would hear it and you would think, oh, that's a female singing,
right?
And it was a male.
Yeah,
and it was just amazing. His knowledge is just just blown away. But he's smart, you know what I mean? But you can tell a lot of those guys, that's what they're. I mean, that's it.
Because
at the end of the day, there's something about, you know, it's like Otis Redding never really showed a ton of range.
Right.
You talk about the acrobatics.
You're like, so right.
Otis wasn't someone who was, you know, singing in all these
operas. Same with Curtis Mayfield. He was all falsetto.
Falsetto.
But it was like nobody else was doing it.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And you felt it. And that's the thing. Like, but I don't think you can tell me a singer nowadays that emotes the way that Otis does.
No. There was a while where... what's the guy? I want some of your brown sugar.
Oh, D'Angelo. But see, D'Angelo's an outlier.
Right.
Because D'Angelo feels the same way, you know, I think he feels the same way. Actually, I got to see him recently, and it was amazing.
He's amazing, man.
But he's a real musician.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I saw him, I think he was playing a Curtis Mayfield song at the, this is 10 years ago, at the tribute. He just comes out on the Fender Rhodes and just starts doing, you know, playing a tune, and you're just going like, look at this fucking guy.
I mean, that guy, I mean, Voodoo, that record Voodoo.
Oh, come on.
Is one of the best records released in a long, long time.
I think every 10 years or so, something like you guys or D'Angelo or Adele slips through.
Yeah.
It gets through, and it goes, here comes the R&B soul band, you know?
Yeah.
And it gets through, and it's like, it was a time where they were trying to get Joss Stone. You know, she was,
right.
They just pounded that. It never really stuck. And I think that had a lot to do with no songs.
Yeah.
In my heart, there was no songs there.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have songs too. Because
that's the biggest thing.
A lot of these fucking people can sing, but they don't know how to write songs. When you guys went in to write the first record, so you're coming from a cover band. And then you and the bass player say, hey, we're going to go to college, but let's track this demo. How do you guys write these songs? You never wrote songs before, right?
Jesse had, and me and him, we started realizing quickly with the first band that it was like, this is the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we have a connection musically, and we knew that. And so Jesse is actually a really good songwriter, really good. And he, you know, he, you know, is obviously he's a huge John Lennon and Paul McCartney fan,
right.
Like obsessive with the Beatles.
Yeah.
And just a lot of, I mean, he just like, he loved Elliott Smith. That was one of his.
Killer.
You know what I mean?
Stupidity Tries. What a song.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Elliott Smith is an incredible.
He understands songwriting.
He understood, to him, that is the pinnacle.
Yeah, it's like Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Elliott Smith. There was these dudes that were, you know, even Jeff Tweedy.
Right.
Where he gets
and
in.
He's a huge Wilco fan.
Absolutely,
like
When you get into some Beatles flavor, a lot of people, even Jellyfish, I've talked about it over and over. Here's a band that understands multi-harmonies, the way songwriting is, you know, like Happiness is a Warm Gun. It's like three fucking songs.
It is.
All that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, and Jesse, that's his... He is obsessed with that, and you know he's been now. Jesse's been in a lot of bands.
Yeah,
you know,
is he older than you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
How old is he?
Jesse, how old's Jesse?
He's like 90 or something, right?
He's 176 years old. I think he's 3 or 4 years older than me.
Right.
So he loves him. Mean,
he played in bands all his life.
He
like
was
junior high up.
Junior high, I think. Yeah. From high school.
Always bass?
No.
Wow.
So Jesse started as the guitar player of this band.
No shit?
That's Jesse's like instrument of choice.
Wow. It had to be the other guy. It had to be like next level then for him to
Well, that was the thing. When Broen got involved, you know, Broen to play with Jason Isbell and a lot of these Muscle Shoals folks. You know, he knew Broen, and he, you know, Jesse played, but had played bass in other bands.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a great musician. He took a back seat, which was, I mean,
that's interesting because bass, is always looked at as like, okay, the buffoon is on bass. But that's in the rock world. In the fucking R&B world, the bass player is the god. I mean, you got to talk about like Funkadelic, Bootsy Collins. You got to talk about, like I said, Lakeside. All the 70s bass player guys, they were the captain. You know, what's the one guy's name? Larry. He's got the microphone on his fucking, on his bass right there.
I mean, Jamerson is, you know, with Motown. Is
Duck Dunn.
Duck Dunn. Yeah. We actually, this last record, Duck Dunn's bass came, like, they brought it to the recording session.
What?
It was incredible.
The Candy Apple Red one?
I think so.
I think that's what he plays, like Candy Apple Red.
I think that it was Beat the Hell.
Wow.
It was amazing. But wow. it was like trying to wrangle a wild stallion because it was just a big block of wood and
those dudes back then, they didn't understand setting up their instrument and stuff.
No.
They didn't understand it at all. It was just sometimes it wasn't even a case and they just grab it
and
you pick it up and you go, dude, the action on this is like 8 feet off the fucking fretboard.
That's exactly, just the fret, you know, the neck is just
warped
huge.
And huge and wrong.
And the action is like 8 feet off the base.
And there's like old gooey cocaine sweat on it. You know
it was
I mean?
Incredible. Yeah. It was incredible. But, I mean, that's, you know, Jamerson with Motown is probably the one that all of us look at. I mean, and then Pino Palladino also with like the voodoo stuff. To me, that's the magic. And if you don't, what we do, if you don't have a good drummer and a good bass player, you ain't shit.
Nope.
Better just cut it out.
You're so right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're so right.
So that's where the magic has to happen.
It's rhythm section.
Yeah.
I always say, you know, show me a great band and I'll guarantee it's a killer drummer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's got to start with that.
It's got to start with that, and if it begins and ends there.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't.
I saw a band last night, and I could blatantly feel the drummer slowing down. Blatantly.
Yeah.
And I was like, really, man?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah.
You're in a seat that anyone would want, and you're slowing down right now. Like, fuck, don't you feel that? You're drifting. His mind's drifting or something.
Yeah.
It's the only way that happens. Or you're a bad drummer, and you're not a bad drummer if you've got one of these high-profile gigs.
You shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be. No,
shouldn't
no.
be. Shouldn't
I mean,
be.
You know, there's some drummers out there that are just fucking unbelievably good.
Yeah, yeah. You know? No, I mean, that's for what we do. If that lacks, that's bad news.
When you start getting the guys and you get in the sound and you start playing gigs, there's got to be no one coming out, right? I'm just saying that because it's so hard to build a draw unless you're doing covers or you're famous, you know?
Yeah.
That, like, when you're there, there's got to be, like, 10 people.
Well, the first show we ever played.
Right. Do you know a lot of friends? Is that what it was?
It was 100 degrees, and there was about three people. We were outside in Alabama. There's about three or four people there.
Right.
But the thing is, I think what translated, and this is that you saw these guys putting like a billion percent into what they were doing,
right?
And it doesn't sound bad. It just grew like anything else. And those first couple shows were pretty rough. And then the one thing we did do, because we sat on Half the City for a while, we couldn't release it until we waited a year.
Wow, why is that?
Everything started getting bigger than we thought it would.
Right.
And so then you start going, all right, shit, what do we, you know, how does this work? So we got a manager and it just sat on it for a little while.
You mean the record company sat on it?
They wanted to release it immediately, but we were just whoa, hang on. How does this work?
That's crazy because if you take the risk of that, after a year, you might be like, yeah, fuck those songs. We're way better now.
Well, that's what happened.
I knew it, man.
That's
right?
What happened.
Because you're only a band 4 months and you track a
that's
record.
That's exactly.
And it feels great because you're new. Like, it's like new pussy, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, all right. And then later on, you're like, this is old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what happened is that we recorded that a year, you know, a year in advance. And by the time we got, I mean, that was the thing. That's why the live show took off so well because we were a better band.
Right.
Way better, and we could wrangle those songs by the time that record came out.
But your record's not out. Are you out on the road, or how are people coming out to see
you? No, our record came out, our new one came out September 9th.
I know your new one.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Oh, no, that's the thing. We build a reputation in town.
Wow. Oh, so you're just touring in town. You're just playing
in
town.
We got a booking agent involved in that time period, and he put us out opening. And
how do you get that shit in Alabama, a booking agent and stuff?
Well, we didn't get it in Alabama. We got it in Nashville.
Okay, gotcha.
You see, gotcha. We got fortunate and got it. Actually, really what happened, we got a phenomenal manager.
Who is it?
Her name's Tracy Thomas.
Wow.
She changed the game.
She sees you in where? Nashville or something?
We played it was a weird connection. We had a friend who was from Birmingham who's booking this. It's called Music City Roots. It had a lot of like acoustic country stuff, but she was
like bluegrass and shit.
Yeah, and they were like such a fan of us. She was such a fan that she like forced us on the show.
Wow.
And our manager saw that and then saw another clip. And
this woman out in Nashville.
And she was like, "Is this for real?"
Yeah.
And she knew our guitar player because she manages Jason Isbell as well.
Right.
And he had played with her, played with him. And so when she got involved, though, the game changed because she knew what she's doing.
And so she approaches you and says, "Hey, you guys want to go next level?"
Yeah.
It's interesting that a manager would know how to work your style of music, because I know a lot of people would probably look at you, powerful managers,
right,
and they'd go, "Too much work, tons of talent, but where am I going to put them?"
Right.
You know, there's no easy dollar here. I'm out. That's a lazy manager.
Right.
But somebody that really understands the ins and outs of music and the rooms across America and the way the game works. Because I know where to put these guys.
Yeah.
They're going to be on Conan. Then I'll put them here with this band. Then maybe they'll play with somebody. They start putting you into the audiences that understand that kind of music.
Yeah, she was really good at what she did, and she still is. And so
when she comes at you, what are her ideas? Like, she says, "Do you want to go next level?" And what were some of the ideas?
Well, so the thing for her, it was really funny because we acted like we got plenty of meetings with other managers, and we sure as shit didn't.
Yeah. We got so many people coming at us.
We met with her Wednesday, and then called her Friday. Like, yep, we're good.
Yeah,
let's do this.
Yeah.
I mean, her whole idea is looking at the show.
Yeah.
And going, this is for her in her mind. Like, this is they ain't shows like this. Yeah. Roaming around.
Old Soul Review.
Yeah.
It's like that movie, The Commitments. You know, once that movie was a smash hit in the theaters because people related with the struggle of these people and how great the music was.
Right.
And it reminds them. I think people are so out of touch with what is great that when they see it, they go, "Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit."
Yeah, I think, at least for me, is like just seeing real music in general. I mean, and so that was her plan. It's like, put our ass on the road. And we played over 200 shows in 2014. I mean, it's kind of a constant thing and kind of built from there. And she just knew, I don't know how she did, but then we got a great booking agent.
Right.
And he knows how, he does Wilco,
badass.
You know Ryan Adams,
badass.
And, you know, things,
two,
you know what I mean, like things that he
real
knows,
musicians,
real musicians
knows how to fucking work that channel of like, if you like Wilco or Ryan, you're gonna love Sunvolt, you're gonna love St. Paul, you're gonna love fucking all that stuff.
And he knew what he was doing.
Jayhawks.
Yeah, and he knew what he was doing. And with those two, I mean, those two combined, it was just like we would have had to really mess something up.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We just hit the road. And, man, when we played shows, but it was that attitude. If we're playing in front of three people, I don't care. Give them the damn show of their life. Make sure that they don't forget you.
Totally.
And that's just it's very old school that way. Going to each market, playing it. Feeling like you're playing a great show. Don't ever play it, just
no punching in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And it just kind of built from there. It's very, very old school in that mentality. And that's how we sold records. I mean, half the city, I think, sold over 100,000 records. And that's
unbelievable.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
In this day and age, that's unbelievable.
Music? Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially, you got to look at all the things against you. The style.
Yeah.
the stealing of records, you know what I mean? And then the no single.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No hit single.
Yeah.
Of course you had singles, but no, you know. Here's a big question I have for you, because I sang all my life and you're an incredible singer. You get out on the road. Now road singing is way different than home and then off for a week or two weeks. Once you start and you're out doing 200 gigs in 2014, what starts happening to your voice? Because you're a new singer, you've never toured, you don't. There's no handbook.
Yeah.
Do you start immediately hire a guy to learn how to warm up and warm down and all this? Are you drinking throat coat teas, getting ready, not talking after shows? What's going on?
I mean, I don't smoke and I don't drink.
Yep, me either.
So those are still, the two things that helps.
Yeah.
However,
sleep is the number
sleep
one.
Sleep is number one.
Yeah.
Sleep is number one, and I have to sleep. That's key. And I don't stay up late.
Yeah. In-ear monitors?
And about a couple months ago, we moved to in-ear monitors, and it's a game changer.
Yeah. Oh, especially falsetto.
Falsetto. You know? It's a game changer.
You're like,
yeah.
Like that fucking,
That's falsetto. I mean, all of that. That was a game changer. And I just had to learn.
Yeah. Well, also, when you're known as this powerhouse singer, you'll overdo it all the time.
Right.
All right, on this one, I'm going to fucking show them. You know,
right.
Like Broken Bones and Pocket Change.
Right.
You know, just.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, I didn't need to go all the way there.
Yeah. No, you do realize that. I mean, there's some nights where you feel like doing it. You're like, all right, let's see how far the rubber band can go.
If the sound is good.
Yeah, there's
boy, the trickery of the sound, man. You get into the sweet spot and you're like, holy shit, I'm on tonight.
Let's just go for it.
Yeah.
There's nights like that. But I mean,
did you get a guy though to start taking lessons?
The only thing I did a session where I was like, how do I keep this?
Yeah.
Because I didn't think, at first I was like, this isn't going to be a job.
It's like, who cares? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
But then you realize, you're like, all right, you're going to be playing. You know, we just realized, like, all right, you know, you got radio in the morning, you got to do a performance there. If you got, you know, just how to, we're at a good place now to where, you know, we're not playing five shows in a row and doing radio each day or six shows or however many.
Yep.
You're
getting famous. You're on this show.
Always. Awesome. Yeah.
But so what do? You hired a guy and got some vocal warm-ups?
Just did some warm-ups and warm-downs.
Yeah. I never knew, heard of warm-downs my whole time singing until I was hanging out with Cedric Bixler from At The Drive-In.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he sings very high.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, hell of a show.
Yeah, and he does warm-downs. What is a warm-down?
I mean, to me, it's just, it's from what I was taught, it's just going back down. You know, you go through the same thing you did to
really?
Warm up.
Wow. And so lip trills, are you doing like?
Yep, doing the.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff like that, and loosening up the voice, and
throat coat tea. You did
tea.
Yeah, I love throat coat. I love the taste of it.
Actually, our tour manager has this crazy tea from some hippie place.
Same one that Cedric is like $200.
I have no idea how
special potion.
It's got some sort of special potion.
I know.
It's great. It is tricky. We're in a bus now.
Yeah.
That's a different ball game.
Okay, you can sleep. Instead
in the
of van. Yeah.
Oh, man, I'd never forget it. We'd sleep in the back, and it'd be hot as hell, and I'd wake up and feel like I pissed my pants because I'd sweating so much. I know bands that do that, and you got to. That's part of the process.
Totally.
But, God, as a singer, I mean, but to be fair, we've only had to cancel two shows our whole time.
You had some.
Well, what I found out, I have really bad allergies.
Oh, bad allergies.
So,
because you'd never been out of Alabama, and all of a sudden you get.
Well, I never had to worry. When did I have to worry about singing?
Yeah, you get into Oklahoma, you're like, what's this bush?
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking up my throat right now.
That's exactly what I went through, and I had so luckily I have a good ENT in Birmingham.
Oh yeah,
and he's got. I don't have to. Hadn't had many worries about it. So.
That's great.
But I didn't know that. You know, as a singer, you're like,
what's going on with me right now?
But, oh, man, I hate canceling the show. I was like, we canceled the show in West Virginia, and I'm in the back just bawling because I'm like, I hate canceling. And the tour manager's like, I think West Virginia's going to be all right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hate it. I hate it.
I canceled one gig ever in comedy, and it was I got ran over on a motorcycle.
Damn.
I did comedy the next day, and then after that, I was like, eh, I better sit down. I was like, I got this, Vicodins. I'm on stage.
God,
like I don't even get high, so now I'm on stage. I'm feeling like fucking, you know, like you know, like a 70s comic, just all heroined up. I'm delivering all slow. I remember one person said, that was the best show I ever seen you do. I was like, hey, fuck you, man.
Yeah. What can you say the worst show you've ever done as a stand-up?
You know, to me, none of them were bad.
Really?
Because they're all, you know what they are? They're all not doing construction.
You're damn right. When I worked for the company my dad works for, I did, was a gopher at a mechanic.
Oh.
At a mechanic shop and cutting grass, pulling, you know, doing the thing.
Cutting grass, fucking framing. I was a house painter.
Oh.
I was, you know, landscaper.
You're damn right. I don't miss that at all. I don't miss that.
You can bring all the bad gigs on you want to say.
You have to remember that, you know, because when you start getting spoiled, which we have, we've gotten
lucky. You got to remember it.
You got to remember it. And so we do, every time we play a show, right before we talk about Oasis Pizza. It's this gig we played
in
a small town in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And we say it every time because you got to remember, like,
this one's for Oasis Pizza.
Yeah, Oasis Pizza, because we got there and we all kind of had a bad attitude and kind of like, what have we done? And we got in there and, you know, we all got in there and we're like, all right, we're going to give them the show of our life. Because it was one of those times you could have just been like, you know what, this is kind of weird.
Yeah, punch in.
People playing, eating pizza, you know, in nowhere, Tennessee.
You're like, this ain't art.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Otis Redding didn't fucking play a pizza joint. He didn't play dominoes.
We thought about doing a Pizza Hut tour after that. But we went in there and I was getting on top of the table while these people were eating. And it was, you could tell you got them.
Yeah,
you got them, and like we're like, don't ever forget that.
Yeah,
don't forget that. And that's what we do.
I know you got to get out of here. Let's just talk the new record real quick. It's so funny. I wanted to ask you if it was your idea or what, because the press on it was, they were really going for a 70s R&B sound here, and I was like, where's that at?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because 70s R&B to me is Earth, Wind & Fire.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Shining Star.
Exactly.
And stuff. And when I first spun the record, I was like,
yeah.
It was so weird. And that, to me, means I'm going to love this record, because I hated Octung Baby when you two put it out.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's fucking one of the crown jewels in my life. But I spin the record, and the first single, what is it, Flux, or what's the
song? I'll Ever Wonder or Flow With It. The first song is All Ever
Flow
With It.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. And then, like, three listens in, I was fucking hooked on this record, man.
Yeah.
And now, I play it every... I keep tweeting, I can't get enough of this record. I Will Be Your Woman is a fucking smoking tune.
Oh, thanks, man.
But the track on this record that really excites me for what you're going to do next is track six, what's it called?
Sanctify.
What the fuck, dude? That song... is now that thing is almost a heroin soul song.
Yeah.
What a fucking song. What is that song about, man?
I mean that song to me is just, it's all about sexualizing
it's so good.
The religion, but it's man, that song, that's what I mean. And what's crazy is that song kills live.
I never
thought it would.
It smokes on the record,
but,
dude.
But that song to me is That's where it was like this. That's one of those songs where you're like, this is where it's going.
Yeah.
And we were just like, all right, this is awesome. And it was a jam session that happened, and Jesse was doing that the boom 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 boom, and Andrew's hitting the drums. I was like, guys, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But we're figuring out something with that.
That's the fucking future of St. Paul to me.
I feel like it is.
I really do, because I think. When you listen to that track, you go, there's their set. That's them. I close the eyes. I don't say it's this. I don't say it's that. I say that's you guys.
I think that was the thing with the set. And I think that's always the thing with second record is finding your voice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the debut record is our, you know,
all your influences and everything build it up.
The second record, that's your statement.
Yeah.
And so that one especially was like, all right, this is where we're headed. This is where
that
it's going.
That fucking song is killer. And then there's. Brain Matter.
Oh yeah, that's
oh,
Yeah.
What a fucking tune, man. This record has some great fucking songs
on
it.
I think so. I'm really proud of it.
Of course, man. I mean, for real. It's so funny because I put it on. I think that the press of 70s R&B really threw me the wrong way because I love 70s R&B so fucking much. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. The first one's kind of 50s, 60s. Yeah. This is going to be 70s. I'm ready for some fucking... Crybaby.
Exactly.
A lot of B3, you know, fucking, you know, maybe up tempo, like, get on up.
Yeah.
Come on, get on up.
Exactly.
I'm thinking it's going to be that. And I put it on and I go, it's not that. So I walk away for a minute and then I go, well, if they didn't pump it like that. So I re-put it on and I go, wait, this record's better than the first record.
Yeah.
And now I just can't.
I think that, and I always, you know, that's how they market shit.
Yeah.
Is all, you know, to me, it's like, the way I view it is typically not how the press is going to view it anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
I think they're lazy.
Yeah, me too.
And they just go, oh, it's 70s R&B. And you go, really? Well, where's that at?
It's like a song like Brain Matter. I'm like, where does that fit on the 70s R&B
track? Not even for a second.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's fine. But I just find, I always kind of, because they're like, genres in general
are
for record labels
and
PR people.
You know what I say? Great record. What genre is it? It's great. That's the genre.
To me, there's great and shit.
Yep, exactly. There's a lot of shit genre.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is to me.
I can't thank you enough for coming down, man. I've been a big fan since I saw that El Rey gig. I've been shouting you out for a couple years now. And I can't talk enough about this. If you look at my Twitter feed, I've been fucking blowing this
record. I am terrible at social media.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. You know what I mean? I hope so. You don't want your front man to be great at social. It's like Rollins said, a good front man is a guy that can't do nothing but be a front man. You can't ever picture him with a job or anything. And that's the fucking truth. I couldn't imagine you up there going, broken bones and pocket chains. And then you're back behind the amp tweeting, just killed it out there. You know what I mean?
I'm so bad at it. I wish I was good at it.
You don't want to be good at that. You know, I have to be, unfortunately, because I'm a comedian.
Right.
I have no manager or agent.
Well, comedians, man. That's the world, man.
It's the world, but you know, to me,
I get to hide behind other people.
That's it, man. I love you, dude. And what time are you guys on tonight?
8 o'clock or something? 9 o'clock? I don't know.
Now, are you coming back through?
I'm sure at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the record just came out.
We'll be back.
Because I got fucking gigs tonight. I know. So
I'm glad we could do. I'm glad I got to be here then.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be back.
But if you're on at like 9, I can make it. No problem.
What time are your gigs?
8 o'clock and midnight. So I can go to your gig. You know what I mean?
All right.
We'll work it out. I got to see it. Because I want to.
It's got the same energy, but it's.
And you're in the Will Turn, which is great.
I can't wait.
Great room. Thank you so much. New record's called See a Noise. And follow these people on Instagram and Twitter and tell people about this. It's how good art gets out there.
Awesome.
Spread the word. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank
I love you, dude.
Thank you.
See ya.